Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview with the very beautiful and very talented Judy Renaud. Judy is about to release her very first CD, one of three that she has planned and already in the can, as they say. Judy is about to have her release party for this very first CD on her 75th birthday. Although having discovered that she was a singer very early in her life, this is the first opportunity that Judy has had to let the rest of us in on that secret. Although she's been playing in clubs and concerts, this is the first chance she's had to make a CD that everyone can have whenever they want it. So hang on. Here comes the story of a brave and dedicated and maybe even a little stubborn, extraordinary woman.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice, oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap. Oh,
The Lynn Show is about being the person you really are. Not the person that you wish you were. Not the person that other people seem to want you to be. Not the person other people tell you you are. Not even the person you think that if you were that person, you would get something that you now don't have. But the person that you really are. As a psychotherapist, it's clear to me that many of us don't have access to all of who we really are and are living out lives that are perhaps versions of ourselves, but not the whole truth. In this show, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. I do that because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. And it is my hope that if you didn't get that gift, if you were somehow cheated from some aspect of yourself, unable to access something that's actually yours, when you hear it, perhaps you will wonder how you got cheated and whether you can get it back. Because I believe, even if you didn't get access to it, it's not too late to recover what you may have lost. In this show, I'm airing an interview with Judy Renaud. You will hear Judy say that she discovered that she was a singer right at the beginning of her life. And although it was necessary for her to, quote, cave, unquote, to her family's belief that she needed not to focus on singing and music, but on something that would, quote, support her, unquote. This happens to a lot of people. And a lot of the people to whom this happens are never able to become the person they really are. Not so with Judy Renaud. As you will hear her say, she held on to the dream. She knew all of her life that one day she would be able to live her dream. And that day has come. So listen to this inspirational woman talk about her journey, the CD that she has finally made, and the release party that she is finally going to enjoy the day before her 75th birthday. Hang on. Here come the show.
Smile, though your heart is aching. Smile, even though it's breaking. When there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by. If you smile through your fear and sorrow, smile and maybe tomorrow, you'll see the sun come shining through for you. Light up your face with gladness, hide every trace of sadness, although a tear maybe ever so near. That's the time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use of crying? You'll find that life is still worthwhile. All you gotta do is smile. Light up your face with gladness. Hide every trace of sadness. Although a tear, it may be ever so near. That's the time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use of crying? You'll find that light, it's still worthwhile. All you gotta do is smile.
What you just heard is a cut from Judy's CD, When Love Comes Around the Corner, and the playing of the extraordinary Eddie Tobin. And now, here's my interview with Judy. Okay, so I'm here with Judy Renaud, and I'm telling Judy what I tell everyone, which is, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And it's clear to me that the art to which you have given your life is the art of music, the art of singing. Would I be correct?
That would be correct.
Yes, good. All right, so I only ask one question. And that is, do you remember the very first time in your life that you were drawn to music, thought about singing, found music interesting, any of that?
It has to go back to when I was a very, very small child.
Yes, tell me.
Yeah. I was used to sing in the car, I used to sing at home, and of course I was playing the violin too, so I was
singing. Well, hold on.
No,
very, very young is what?
Very young, 3, 4 years old.
Singing in the car?
Yeah.
Singing in the house? Oh, yeah. What were you singing?
Anything I could learn.
And how did you learn
nursery it? Rhymes. You know, Mary had a little lamb.
Yes.
By ear.
By ear. So yes. It was just somebody would sing this stuff, you would hear it somewhere, and then you would take it on and do it.
Correct.
Is that right? And did the family comment on this?
They enjoyed it. Yes, they did.
They got a kick out of the fact that they had this little singer in their midst.
They encouraged it. My grandfather was a good singer.
Ah.
So they just say, it's in the family. It's in the genes.
Yes.
From Wales. So.
Yeah. Okay, so so it wasn't only that you spontaneously did it and that you got a kick out of it, but that the family gave you the idea this was a good thing.
They always gave me it was a good thing to sing, yes.
Yes, right. Okay, so did you have singing lessons?
I did not have singing lessons, with the exception of choirs in the church and in school.
So you sang in, you sang in choirs in,
right,
in church and school.
Right.
And did you think about making a life of singing?
It's all I ever wanted to do, really.
Really?
Really it was.
So you always knew that this was what you wanted?
I did.
So did you tell your family this is what you wanted?
I did. I told my family, and that they were not too encouraging about. They thought maybe something that was like a day job would be a real good idea, like be a teacher.
Right.
Really didn't interest me at all.
So we're talking here about high school? High school, right? When you are beginning to think seriously about what you might do with your life, and you're saying to them, well, I'm going to be a singer, and they're saying, really? What about being a teacher? Okay, so what did you do?
I folded. And I went to school, and I...
What did you major in?
I majored in business.
In business? Oh, yeah, right. It's serious. Serious money, right?
So I went... No, I never made any serious
money. Well, but I mean, that's what they imagined, was that you were going to be... I don't know.
I ended up in office management.
Right.
Made a whole lot of not making any money, but I had a life, and I raised my family with
So you did all this stuff.
I did all of it.
Oh, you're not kidding when you say you folded.
I did.
You didn't only fold in terms of what you studied, but you lived that life.
I did. I was going to go to college for music and for physical ed.
Right.
I was encouraged to do the physical ed part and take music as a sideline.
Right.
I wanted to do just the opposite.
Yes.
So I rebelled and went to business college.
Oh, I see. You showed them.
Yeah. And I lived a life not making a lot of money, but I had a job all of my life. I never had a problem getting a job.
So. Well, I'll bet you didn't, but did you sing during this time?
I did not sing during that time.
Oh, my God. What a shame. And during that time, would you say you forgot about it?
Never forgot about it.
You never forgot about it?
Never let the dream go away. Just realized it wasn't time.
Okay, so you said to yourself, I'm doing what I have to do here, but one day. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, so what happened?
When my youngest child graduated high school, I packed my bags and was already preparing to go back and see if I could sing. I hadn't tried.
Oh, my God.
I was singing in my basement and lots of vibrato, and the notes were still there, but I said, I'll never be able to do this at this point in my life. I moved myself from South Carolina back to California at 48 years old.
Wow. You started out in California?
I'm from California. I'm from Oakland and San Francisco area.
Right. So then, for your married life, you were in South Carolina?
Oy. I was in Florida. I was in South Carolina. I was in California. I was in North Carolina.
I see. But you wound up in South Carolina, and then you said, adios, muchachos.
Everybody.
And went back to California.
And picked up my music.
And how did you do that?
With an old high school friend who was had been the director of the Youth Symphony in Sacramento, and he started writing charts for me and said, you need to work really hard for a year before you go out and look for a job.
Well, work at what?
Singing. So I went.
So did you take lessons, or you just sang?
I just sang, and I learned the songs, and I did my homework, and dug.
So this was, so what you were doing was creating an act or creating a repertoire.
Correct.
Right? And using the instrument.
Yes.
But you never studied.
I didn't study. I have studied since then. I didn't study then. And I did go back to work 5 nights a week in Sacramento.
At what?
Singing at the it was a Holiday Inn. It was mm-hmm. John Q's, a beautiful tuxedo room upstairs overlooking the river.
So you just went down there and auditioned?
I did. I heard the job was open. I went down totally naive and got the job 5 nights a week.
Wow. And how did you feel about it?
I loved it.
Yes.
I was happy. I was scared. I spent every day learning new songs and trying to become a real singer.
And your life is about it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, good. So then you hit the ground running, essentially, right? And was it supporting you?
Yes, it was supporting me.
Mm-hmm.
It was supporting
you. Yeah, so you had the ironic experience of beginning at the top. You know?
That was the thought I put in my head. That there was no reason for me to have to pay a lot of dues.
Right. And
it's been in my head all of my life. I know what I am capable of doing,
right,
and what I should be doing and what I want to be doing. So I did my homework, and I went out and looked for the best job in town and got it.
Amazing. Okay, so how long were you there?
I was there about a year.
Uh-huh, and then what?
Then they decided to change to a country
mm-hmm.
venue.
Yeah.
And a karaoke type thing.
Yeah, right, not you.
No.
No. So, did you...
Then I moved into San Francisco, and my son was not well. He had AIDS.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
So he was in need of support.
Yeah.
So I started to put it away again, and I went back to singing only in the church where he wanted to go, the Science of Mind Church, and became musical director in the San Francisco Science of Mind Church and sang once a week there.
Was that a paying gig?
Yes, it was a paying gig.
Okay,
yeah.
So you were making a living and singing once a week?
No, I was not making a living singing anymore.
You were making a living doing this musical director thing.
No, I wasn't making a living doing that either. I was getting paid for it, but I had to go back to work, and I went to work for the Foundation for Glaucoma Research. Office management, back to my roots.
Right, right.
And I did that for about 8 years.
Oh, my God.
And just worked again, singing a little bit, but continuing to build my voice. Then I took some lessons at the San Francisco Conservatory.
Mm-hmm.
Took a vocal physiology class, which we never sang in, but taught me how to breathe and how to visualize where all the air pockets were in my body that I could draw from.
Really?
Amazing class.
Where are they?
They're all over. They're in your neck chambers. They're all these little holes. I just think all these little porous places in your bones and your... Everything has got porosity to it, has oxygen in it, has... And when you feel like you can't sing anymore...
Right.
You visualize that.
And you draw from it.
You draw from it. And it is there.
Amazing. I never heard that.
Yeah. So that was one of the best things I ever did.
I'll bet it was.
And then I went to one more class. These were night classes at the conservatory with Faith Winthrop. And she was amazing. She was just a no-nonsense, classically trained singer, but also working at the Ritz, playing piano for herself, and at night, doing the classics, you know, the standards.
Mm-hmm.
And she really got me out of my fear of, I can't do this. Well, really, really, you can't do this? And she just gave me no measure of, sympathy in, I can't do this. And she got me over my fear of trying.
So you were afraid?
I was afraid I couldn't do any more than what I already knew. She opened me up. She opened me up to higher notes. She opened me up to singing through colds, through singing through not feeling well, singing through a headache. You think they can sing out there? You can sing. Get up on the stage. You really can do this.
Yeah. So, what would you call that training?
It was tough love, confidence building.
So, I'm trying to figure out what you actually did when you were with her.
We did vocal exercises. Mm-hmm. We did scales.
Right.
Mostly she talked me through my, I can't do this, excuses.
I see. So you would be working on something and you would say, I can't do it. And she would say, right, do it.
Yeah.
And then you would.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Good for her. Right. Okay, so now we're, you're in San Francisco. And at some point, you must leave there.
I left there after 10 years. My son had passed away.
Yeah.
And it was just time to make a change. And I ended up back here in Sarasota.
1998?
1997. And I was pulling myself together out of depression.
I'll bet you were.
Not knowing why I couldn't handle this, like, the snap of a finger.
You mean the death of your son?
Death of my son, breakup of marriage, not doing what I wanted to do, not knowing where I was going to do and how I was going to restart my life.
Wow.
And had...
made you come here?
Two of my best friends offered me a marketing job.
Oh, terrific.
And to stay with them and help them try this marketing...
Oh, concept, yeah, to get it off the ground.
Get it off the ground.
Right.
And I said, well, I don't know if I can do that. She says, well, let's give it a try.
Yeah, really, what have you got to lose?
Yeah. So I moved in with them out off university, and we worked on this for 3 or 4 months. We didn't sell it, but it was a lot of fun. I met everybody in town.
Yes, and you made...
Because it was in the hospitality business. So I was in the hotels, and I was in the restaurants, and I was at the golf courses. We were going to try and build an in-house TV presentation, which they do in many places, of what's available in the area, and also... build a concierge training program. Mm. Everybody thought it was a great idea, but everybody wanted to wait till somebody else did it.
Right.
And I wasn't a big enough salesperson to close the deal. So.
But you made all these contacts.
Made all these contacts. Met a lot of people.
Right. Were you singing at all then?
I was then going down to the jazz club and sitting in on the Sunday afternoon deals they had at Holly Hall.
Uh-huh.
So I was starting to meet some of the musicians. I wasn't going out dating. I would just go out and do that. That was getting me out of my doldrums and back into the music area.
Right.
And then of all people, Al Hickson
invited
me out to the Buccaneer.
Yes.
And I went out there and was singing and ran into Tom, of course, the first night I was out there. Two at that time, too, met everybody that
That's
was
right.
hanging around with.
Okay, so you come down to the Buccaneer. And the very first night, you meet Tom, and you're singing at the jam, right, at Buccaneer. And are you singing anywhere else?
No, just at Holly Hall with the
Right, so you're just sitting in jams now.
Just sitting in jams.
You're not looking for work.
Not looking for work, trying to find out what's going on in town and and participate.
Yes. Yeah. And so, what happened?
Well, I ran into Tom, and we started dating, and decided that we were going to be a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were going to be a couple, we were trying to figure out how we could make this work and work together, mm-hmm. rather than my going off looking for a job or getting a job with another band, he going off and working with other bands.
Right.
And he said, you need to learn how to play the keyboard.
Oh, you didn't know?
No. I didn't know how to play the keyboard. And this was like, actually, Joe down at Monroe's had called and asked Tom to come in and take Art Rulini's place for a while. He said, well, I have a new partner now. Her name is Judy. And that was on a Monday. And he wanted us there on Friday. And he says, Judy, we're going to go to work on Friday at Monroe's as a couple. you need to learn to play the keyboard by Friday. I said, that's what I said. Yeah. So I went over and learned how to play a few chords, and I had taken some piano lessons in high school, but I had no knowledge of what chords were. I was trying to read all the notes. I said, stop it. Just stop that. We don't have time for that. Learn the chords to these two or three songs. So he showed me what they were, and I practiced them, and I played Friday. So he could play the saxophone.
It's hilarious. So how many songs could you play?
I could only play three that first night. But now I play for myself all the time.
Well, but three songs, how long was the gig?
We were there for probably 7 or 8 months.
No, no, I mean how long, how many hours? Or
oh, it was 3 or 4 hours, I don't remember.
So you kept playing the same three songs?
Okay. No, no, Tom was playing the keyboard. He wanted me to play a few songs.
Oh, I see.
He could pick up the saxophone.
So he could pick up the saxophone. I got it, all right. So you didn't have to play all night. You just had to play a couple of songs. Oh, I got it.
I would have ran away from home.
But apparently, over time, you built your repertoire. Is that what happened?
That's correct. I'm still doing that. I'm still learning how to play the piano and do as much as I can behind us. We have two keyboards when we work together, and I'll play behind him while he's playing saxophone. He'll play behind me, and I'll play strings along with that, with the other keyboard.
Oh, nice.
When he's not playing the saxophone.
Right.
So I've got that going.
Right. So you're still practicing, you're still learning, you're
absolutely.
Still, right?
In fact, when I finish this recording, that's my next goal is to become a really good piano player. I'm going to go back to the basics and really learn what I'm doing. It's all coming out of my head and my hands, but I haven't really got real good theory information about what I'm doing.
So you're going to study? Is that
what you mean?
Yeah. Does that mean you're going to go to school or you're going to find a piano teacher?
No, I'm going to study. There's a lot online. Eddie helps me. He's always given me, do it this way. And I'll ask him questions about little pieces about theory, and he'll explain it to me very gently, and he knows that I have this long of an attention span.
It's not very long.
2 inches long.
Right.
So just take that one home and work on that.
Right.
So
it'll be a riff, or it'll be a fingering, or it'll be something like that. Right.
A way of voicing the chord and reminding me that I need to learn my theory about, you know, the progression of the chords and what's a 2-5-1. I need to have that in my head automatically and understand how the progression usually goes from the beginning of the song to the bridge, where we're going, so that you can see the tonal centers of each of these sections of the song. So you automatically start thinking 2-5-1 or 2-6, you know, whatever, what is going to be within that key. That's my next lesson. So I just have to get that so solid that it's automatic.
Following her dream, Judy went to Spirit Ranch Studio in Sarasota, Florida, and recorded 36 songs so that she could create 3 CDs. The engineer was the remarkable Bud Snyder. Her accompanist was her good friend and pianist, accompanist, performer extraordinaire, Eddie Tobin. But it wasn't so simple to simply go into the studio and do the recording. There was a very big learning curve attached to this endeavor and required so much learning, something Judy likes to do, fortunately, and is good at. Okay, so we're talking here about the things that you had to learn in order to do create the CD which you have now created, right?
Correct. What I had to learn was more than I knew before, which was getting up and singing in front of a microphone.
Oh, God, right. Yes, right. Because all of your experience with singing is live.
Live.
Right. And recording is very different from...
Very different.
Okay. So you mentioned that one of the first things was recording with headphones.
With headphones on, with a more or less flat sound rather than the sound that I'm used to hearing through the microphone and the amplified sound in a club. It was flat, even though there was a little bit of reverb on there, just so I wouldn't be totally nuts. it sounded very different to me.
Yeah. This, you just said something that I want to ask about. When you sing in a club and the it's going through the system, does that add some reverb? Is that why it sounds different in a club?
It adds reverb. It adds as much treble or mids or bass as you want. So the sound is enhanced.
In a club. It's enhanced. It's not flat.
It's not flat at all.
I didn't realize that.
That's why you plug your microphones in an amplifier and you find the sound you want.
And it is, in fact, amplified.
Amplified. When you're singing through the headphones, while there's some amplification and some of that on there, it's not the same as that wonderful ambient sound that you have in a club with all of the people around you and rugs and all of this that you don't have so much in a studio.
There's nothing there.
Studio is wood and flat and sound barriers and sound. But for you, it's pretty flat.
Yeah, right. So it's little disturbing.
You hear all your flaws. Flaws or your style.
I love that. Okay, so first you had to become accustomed to the fact that what you were sounding, what you were hearing is not what you're used to hearing.
I did, but I was prepared for that. I was prepared for it in the way that I was on a mission.
Aha.
And I was going to do it, and I was going to get it done, okay? I knew it was going to be a little different. I just went ahead and sang and knew in my own head that I was doing the best job I could.
God, this is so important, I think. Because whenever you're doing whenever anyone is doing something they haven't done before, there is always the question of how is it going to go? How am I going to feel? Is it going to be all right? And I think a lot of people get stuck because they're afraid to take that leap. They're afraid that it won't be what they wanted or what they're expecting. So do you know where you got this, courage, certainty? You know what I mean?
I do know where I got the courage. The courage, I've always had the courage.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of making it happen. Mm-hmm. And saying, today is the day I'm doing this particular job in my life. This is part of who I am and who I want to leave behind for this world.
Yeah, I really want to highlight that.
There's a peace inside of me that I found years ago through lots of other things that have gone on in my life. And I know who I am, I know what I have, and I know that is something worth sharing, and it's not maybe, you know, the top of the line, but it's not the bottom of the line. It's good enough.
And being able to say that, I really believe that's what makes some people able to do it and other people not able to do it. It's good enough. Theirs is good enough. But that's not okay, somehow. So amazing, congratulations. Okay, so then the recording itself was, not like falling off a log. You had to work at it, you had to think about it, you had to deal with it. Okay, so then having done the recording, then comes the production, which is...
The production part took... place over a couple of months period where I listened to 37 songs.
Good. Okay, fine. You listened and listened to 37 songs, right.
And how do you do that? I mean, that's a year's worth of work right there, trying to get used to listening to yourself on 37 songs.
Now, wait a minute. Is this before it's amplified? Is it still flat?
It's still flat.
Oi.
Still flat.
Right.
And really hard to listen to.
Yes. Oh, my God.
In a lot of ways, except that it really makes you aware of who you really are.
Yes.
And what you're working with. Now, how do I get where I want it to be like what I know it sounds like when it's coming out of that microphone,
right,
in an amplified state.
Well, the sound that people hear in the club, the sound that they keep coming back to see you to hear, right? That's the sound you want to have on your recording.
Correct.
Right. Not only for you, because you want to sound like that, but for the audience who's expecting you to sound like that.
Correct.
Okay, good. So, oh my God, so you have to listen to these. I didn't realize that they were flat when you were listening to them
pretty flat.
And so, we don't mean, we should specify here, we don't mean that you were not on key, that kind of flat,
no.
But flat without, I don't even know how to talk about this.
Without enhancement.
Right.
Without a
right,
lot of enhancement.
Right.
Pretty much what I used to sound like singing when I started singing in church.
Wow.
Which I was used to doing for years, so I knew that's what I sounded like.
Yeah, okay, so it wasn't such a shock.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So in listening to them, you had to make a couple of choices, it seems to me. One was how you wanted them to be amplified, maybe, or what you wanted to do with them.
Correct. I told Bud, I just make it warm and intimate,
right,
which is what it sounds like in the club.
Right.
It's warm. Jazz is a warm, intimate sound, and he knows that. So that's what he went for, but he didn't know what I was hearing in my head, and I didn't know what he was hearing in his head.
Yeah.
But we got together. It took us a few songs, but we hit on it after about the fourth or fifth song, and from there on out, it was...
He got it. He knew.
We knew who each other was,
right,
and what we were wanting to hear.
Right, right. And we need to say that this is Bud Snyder, who has a very impressive resume as an engineer,
yeah,
and that you were being accompanied and mentored and cared for by the extraordinary Eddie Tobin.
Correct.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay, so after the mixing, then comes...
Then we sent that off to Sound Labs for mastering.
Mm-hmm. And say a little bit about what mastering does.
What mastering does, after Bud mixes, where everything is pretty well level and such, then it goes off from mastering to enhance all the reverb, to bring in the stereo sounds, to make it sound like what you're used to hearing on anybody's recording that's out there.
Right, right.
To bring it alive. It brings it alive.
It makes it a record.
Yeah.
To use an old-fashioned term.
A balanced record with all of the lovely enhancements that all records have that you don't really realize are there,
right?
But it's what makes it work,
right? Right, right, right. And which a voice by itself cannot do.
No.
Right, right, right. Okay, so mastering. Then we go to production. No.
Production.
Production. Right.
Well, reproduction.
Reproduction. Exactly.
Okay, right. Now, and that goes, you know, the birth of the baby. We're getting to the birth of the baby.
Yeah, right.
Then it goes to disc makers,
mm-hmm,
who I worked with to find out what was the best package for me for the distribution level that I look at.
Could you say a little bit about what the choices were?
Choices are you can do the old-fashioned jewel case, which is what I did.
Right.
With an inserts with 4 pages or 10 pages or booklets or whatever you
right,
want
right,
to do.
Right.
Or you can do one of these little cardboard
right
inserts that you can put it in. And I looked at all the different packages they had and decided on the one that was best for who I am and where I'm going to distribute.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
And then we go to CD Baby.
CD Baby has one of the most amazing distribution packages for independent artists.
Right.
It seems to me, from being my first time out in this business at this particular point in my life, won't be the last time, but the first time, and they seem to be very easy to work with. Their distribution package, they put the recording up online digitally.
Mm-hmm.
They sell your albums for you physically. They push the albums and the digital through to iTunes, to Spotify Radio, to Sound Exchange, which is Sirius Radio, and things of that sort. And it's amazing where all they push it through for a very reasonable amount of money.
Right.
Of course, another part that we didn't talk about was getting the licensing for this and paying the royalties.
Oh, God, that's right, because you're doing other people's songs.
Right.
Right. Oi. 37.
Yeah. 12 on this album, but right. 37 songs, and I...
So what do you do? Is this through ASCAP, or...?
Well, no, this is through either Harry Fox Agency or Easy Song Licensing,
right.
who I used, and they get you your mechanical rights, and you pay for your rights and all the royalties up front.
What do you mean?
Royalties for the composers of the songs have to be paid per recording. So if you do 100 recordings, you pay royalties for 100 songs.
You mean if you duplicate 100 CDs, you have to pay royalties on 100 CDs
up
to 12
front.
To 12 different, assuming they're 12 different composers?
Correct.
Up front?
Up front. They get their money before
whether
you
sell
get
it or not.
Yours. Yes.
Whether you get yours or not. Oh my goodness.
And that's how the system works.
Now, well, you know, as a songwriter, I can't say I'm upset about that.
I'm not either. As in my own song mm-hmm. that's on the album, the title song on the album,
right?
When Love Comes Around the Corner, is I joined BMI so that I could get my royalties off my own song.
Right.
Which should buy me, you know, a bottle of scotch at the end of 300 CDs.
Well, you don't know. Do you know how much you make on a given, what one song on a given CD makes?
I'll make 11 cents.
I see. Well, buy those CDs. You're right about that bottle of, right? Not even fancy water.
No, I know.
Oh, well, good.
No, but it's quite an interesting process. The whole process has taken up this last 8 months of my life and Tom's life too, because I've been learning, which I love to do.
Yeah. Right.
So it's given me a wonderful project to learn. I am now ready to go fishing.
Not quite yet.
Not quite yet,
because we have the launch party.
We have the launch party.
Right. So the launch party on Judy's 75th birthday, which will be...
October 7th. My birthday is the 8th, but the party's on the 7th.
Right. And it is a Friday.
Friday night.
At
Amores on Longboat Key, and that's on Bay Isles Road.
555.
We're normally there on Friday night with Eddie Tobin, my husband Tom Renault. So we're doing it on that night since we're there, and our fans and our family are there already.
Yeah.
And I'm inviting everybody who would like to come along.
Right.
Come out early, have dinner. 6:30, 7, you know, whatever. We're going to start the music. Eddie will be playing at 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be entertaining as usual.
Oh, my God.
And about 8 o'clock, when people are settled down from the major early dinner crowd, then we'll start our music party.
Right. And at that event, you can purchase either a...
CD. Or you may purchase a download card, which just saves you the trouble of going on CD Baby and purchasing the CD or downloading the songs from them and having to go through the process of using your credit card or at all, which is everybody does. I mean, that's fine. But
right, but they can pay
some.
You.
You can pay me.
And purchase a download card, and then they go to CD Baby and just put in their number.
Put in the number and the songs. They
download.
Can download the album.
Can they download individual songs? Or?
Not from the card. They can download individual songs on CD Baby.
Right.
But the card is for the whole album.
Okay, so this experience, you've waited a very long time for this.
75 years.
Yes, it's a long time.
Long time.
And so I'm assuming that you said it took pretty much 8 months to achieve, to start to almost finish.
Start to almost finish with that many songs to decide what I was going to do for this first album, yes.
Right, yeah. Okay. So during, as you said, you know, you were obsessed by this. It was an amazing learning curve. There were all kinds of pieces that required concentration, attention, new learning curves, right? So as you said, you know, you're ready to go fishing. So I'm wondering, I'm guessing that when you enter into something like this, it takes you over, and there isn't very much else going on because it's consuming.
It's all consuming.
I mean, each one of these pieces require your complete attention, it seems to me.
There are so many details. If you don't do that with a lot of attention, you're going to make a lot of mistakes.
Yes.
And there's no way to go back. Once it's produced and out there, it's done.
So, as I started to say, this is all consuming. So, before you begin the process again with the next two CDs, because I know there are 12 in this one?
12 in this one, 13 in the second one, and 12 in the last one.
Okay.
Unless I write another song.
Right. Well.
Or two.
And that sort of goes along with what I was about to say. So, once the launch is launched, how do you think you'll feel? Or how do you feel now, given that
I feel like there's a huge weight going off my shoulders that's been on my shoulders all my life. Because it's something I've wanted to do. That brings tears to my eyes. It's an accomplishment. It's very important.
Yes.
For me.
No, I think it's very important,
yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
And I really, if you don't mind, I'd like to talk a little bit about that. About what it takes to have held on to a dream for this long and then take the risk of going for it. Because it has to be a risk.
A risk? I don't know there was a risk.
Well, how did you feel about it? I mean,
I felt like it was my time to do it.
Yes.
And I'd done everything else in my life that I was supposed to do, and I think I've done a good job with it,
mm-hmm.
with my family and my children and my life, and it was time.
Yeah.
And the dream never went away. When dreams are part of who you are, part of your soul, part of who you really are,
yes.
It's not really a dream. It's something about you that has to be done and expressed.
And I only have one more question, and it is, having given as much of your life to singing as you have done, what would you say about what that's like or what that's meant to you?
What that means to me is it makes me whole.
Mm.
It makes me feel good about that I am living my purpose,
yes,
what I am all about, and it allows me to share the gift that I was given,
yeah.
at birth with other people, and hopefully they get enjoyment out of it as much as I do. And that's, I really do enjoy what I do. I enjoy what I hear, and I hope other people do also.
It's a great place to stop. Thank you so much, Judy Renaud.
Thank you.
Judy says that singing makes her feel whole. It allows her to know that she's living her purpose, that she has, in fact, made her dream real. This, of course, is what people say when they are being the person they really are. And you hear, Judy, it's a through line in her life. Having discovered that she had this thing inside of herself, the ability to sing, the ability to communicate the emotion that she feels through her singing to others who hear it, the joy that it gives her to do it, and the joy that she's happy to see it gives to the people who receive it. This is what it feels like when you are being the person you really are. You're not second-guessing it. You're not saying, maybe I should. You're not wondering what it will mean and if it will cost. And as Judy said, when you know that this is what you have to offer and that it's good enough, you don't have to worry about how others will respond to it. Because it's not about others. It's about you. And it's important to point out here that when I say that you are living the person you really are, I don't only mean that you're an artist. I mean in every way that one can deny oneself, not be as straightforward as one really is, not defend oneself or stand up for oneself, not take care of oneself, honor the body that you're living in. All of the ways in which we don't take care of ourselves, we aren't the person we really are. So, of course, it is my hope that listening to Judy, you're asking yourself, was there something I discovered early in my life that I gave up, that I decided simply wasn't for me, that I decided was too scary to do, that I judged as not good enough? Would you like another shot at that? Because it isn't too late. And if you want to talk about that, if you have questions about that, you can reach me at my website, thelynshow.com, T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, thelynshow.com. So, I want to say again, as Judy and I mentioned in the interview, that her release party, her launch, and it is literally a launch, the launch of the life that she's waited all this time to have, is on October 7th at Amore Restaurant. And come on down. If you haven't already heard Judy, get a chance to hear her by her CD. As always, I hope you heard something in this show that you can use. Something that you didn't know, something that amused you, something that intrigued you, something that will bring you back. Because, as always, I will be back next week, same time, same station, and as always, I sure hope you will be too. We're going to go out on another cut from Judy's CD. And this is the title song from the CD, the song that Judy wrote. And as it is playing, hopefully she's making her 11 cents. This is When Love Comes Around the Corner.
When love comes around the corner, something is in the air. The breeze in the trees feels warmer. The sun in the sky is fair. When hearts meet and beat with a flutter, and eyes meet across the way, then love comes and rests on your shoulder. It's funny and sunny that way. It's only a glance or a moment. It's only a smile that is sweet. It's only a touch or a feeling. It's of your own heartbeat. When soft rains fall on the flowers and the sunlight fills the glass, again.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. My shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. Singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have got to